email todaysor@rte.ie.
And you can text us on 51551, as a lot of you are doing, particularly on things like freedom of information. This debate is infuriating, says one listener. The public already own public sector information. And Simon McGar tweets to say, it's not just journalists who use FOI for non-personal requests. The number of citizens' requests fell 2,750 to 1,250 on the introduction of fees. Ireland, as we know, has a long history of sending priests and nuns and indeed some lay people to parts of the world which are in need of spiritual, educational, healthcare and other forms of assistance. An inaugural awards ceremony later this month will recognise the contribution made to developing communities by members of Irish religious orders. I'm joined now by two of those missionaries, Cora Richardson of the Holy Rosary Order and Columban Father Hugh McMahon. Good morning to you both. Sister Cora, you became a nun at a young age. Did you join the Holy Rosary Order specifically with a view to going abroad and serving on the missions?
Yes, I had a missionary vocation, definitely.
But it was one that you discerned after some time. I think you were in university and you studied, was it politics?
I did political science, Roman law, jurisprudence and history.
And managed to fall in love with a young man along the way?
I did, yes.
And how did things go from there?
Well, I didn't realise it was getting very serious and the young man would have liked to have married me. And I said, listen, if I marry you now, when I'm 40 and you're a bit older, we will have a bad time because I'll say to you, I should have been a sister missionary.
And did the other side of that coin cross your mind that through your life when you were 40 as a sister, what would it have been like if I had got married to that young man?
Well, I must say I made the right decision for us both. And I'm happy that I did that. I have no regrets.
And you ended up in South Africa. How did things go there?
Well, South Africa, of course, was ruled as was an apartheid country. Excuse me. And it was ruled by a white, unjust government. And from the very beginning, I was a bit involved in trying to bring justice in my small way.
What kind of things did you do?
I worked with African people. I was teaching in a white school. We were not allowed to have an African high school. So we had a white high school and I was teaching in that school. And immediately I started working with the African people. I took a legion, two legion groups in two different areas, completely African areas. And then in other ways, I try to educate people to demand their rights. That was my big thing. And for women to stand up and claim their rights.
In your case, it's probably true to say that the apple hadn't fallen far from the tree because you had a family history of involvement in public service and activism.
Yes, my father and mother were both involved. My mother was Cumannamon. My dad would have been, he was actually arrested by the British and he was imprisoned in Frangok in Wales. My mother's eldest brother, J.J. Walsh, was on hunger strike in England. He was arrested. He was arrested several times. He told us he was in about 12 different jails.
And he, of course, was the first Minister for Post and Telegraphs, J.J. Walsh,
right.
In
yes.
the state. Now, Father Hugh McMahon, your path was different. Just to summarise that, if you would.
Yes, I went from secondary school straight into Dalgan Park to be a missionary priest. That was my...
And where did that take you?
It took me to Korea. We all thought we were going to Latin America, but they just put up a list on the notice board one day and we looked at it and there I was. Six of us went to Korea. And we said, where
is
Korea?
It was quite a change of direction. Did you have to get an explanation?
No explanation in those days. You just went where you were sent.
And you had presumably been learning Spanish.
We did. We did a bit of Spanish. Not great, but we had a little bit, yeah.
And what explanation did you get?
Oh, just the need was there and that's it. Go. And we just went off and got... Well, we were founded for China originally, the Columbans, so...
And was this just shortly after the Korean War?
Yeah, it was just... Well, they were still settling in after the Korean War, you know. I was just thinking it was actually 50 years ago almost to today. And I'm in the Society of St. Columban and our feast day is on the 23rd of November. And that was a day off for us. We were studying the language. And... I remember getting up that morning and saying, oh, I can have a sleep in because we have a mass later in the day. And someone outside in the corridor was saying, Kennedy was shot. And I was saying, one of our men was called Ollie Kennedy and he was up on the DMZ, the border. And I said, the North Koreans are coming in again, because we were told all the time the North Koreans on the way in. And I said, will I sleep on or will I go out and find out more about this? And they didn't sound too excited. They were excited, but they weren't too excited. And I kind of slept on for a while and found out it was President Kennedy in in the US who was shot.
And how did your life and your life's work unfold after that? It must have been terribly difficult to manage to make connections with people.
No, it wasn't, because we were working through communities and the church and different places I was in. Like, we were after the Korean War, then people were still settling down, and then Korean began to develop and people were pouring into the city. So we went in, up and set up new communities around the city, around Seoul. And then all the time there was pressure on the church there for democratic rights. You know, we used to be out in parts of demonstrations. It was down in Gwangju, which was a city. There was supposed to be an uprising there. We were surrounded by the military and we were caught in there. And our parish chairman was in jail because of it. So it was always something new happening.
You've both spoken about your work for human rights. What about, is that something that was kind of latched on or bolted on to your work after you became missionaries? I mean, was it primarily about, at least initially, about going out and introducing people to Catholicism?
Well, my idea wasn't introducing people to Catholicism. I felt that we had had a lot. We were very blessed. I felt myself very blessed and grateful for that. And it was really a call, very hard to explain. It's as if Jesus came and put his hand on my shoulder and he said, Nuala, that was my name, I want you. And that is hard to explain to anybody who hasn't experienced it. But I do know that as soon as I went out, my whole aim was uplift the people, give them justice, give them their rights. They were not treated justly. And neither are they in Ireland today, some people.
Father Hugh?
Yeah, well, I think we went out to set up communities more, and we figured, you know, whatever we got involved with the people, wherever the needs were, we were really into building up Christian communities, parishes, really. But because of that, if the people were very poor, we were involved in helping them. When they were caught up in the human rights thing, we were caught up in that. So it was really wherever we went and whatever, you were involved with communities, you worked through communities and with them. So that's kind of led us where we went.
There's nothing like the numbers, if any, people now going abroad on the missions, to use that phrase, Sister Cora. What do you think is the future for that then? Or is it just that the work has been done, the people in those countries where you worked, they can now look after themselves? Well, they have to, I suppose.
Well, they have to. Our aim was you stay in a place, say, 5 years, and whatever it is you're doing, you train people to do that and you hand over and they do it better than we do. For example, the last thing I was doing was anti-trafficking, because with the Soccer World Cup 2010, that was big. And I was right in the middle of it between Joburg and Pretoria. And then the people have to do it themselves. You're only one and you're with your whole congregation, you're only a few. So if the people don't take over and they're not trained to do it, you're wasting your time.
Are you glad you did it?
Oh, very glad. It was really, really great. And all the different places I was in, I went from there to China too, and that was something new. So it was really all the different periods I was in, and meeting great people. The Korean people are great people, and the Chinese people too. So interact with them, learning from their culture, learning about their way of life, really kind of broadened my ideas of everything. And that's one thing that people say, you had a hard time there. I feel guilty because, you know, looking back on it, I don't really ever had a tough time during it, the whole thing.
And when we talk about, or when we use the phrase Irish missions into the future, is that going to be just a reference to what's past?
It's a challenge because, as you know, the church has changed, and the missions in the past came out of the church that was in Ireland, say, 10, 20 years ago. Now we have a new church, a new Ireland, a new church. We have to produce a new type of missionary, and that's a big challenge for us and for the church in Ireland.
And Sister Cora Richardson, yes. There's a new pope as well.
Yes, he's wonderful. We're very happy.
What impresses you about him? Just in the context of what you've been talking about.
Well, first of all, the poor are his priority. And you see, I'm a follower of Jesus, and that was Jesus' priority. And the Catholic Church had gone away from it. Money seemed to become very important. It wasn't important to Jesus. And Pope Francis seems to me to be a man in his own skin who is true to himself and to Jesus.
Sister Cora Richardson, thank you for coming in, and also Father Hugh McMahon Cullumban, Father, congratulations on your award. We could have stayed talking a lot longer, but right now, though, we've got to take a break, and after that we've got Brian Jennings at the news desk.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.